Chapter 11. Radiant Matter, Plasma, and Plasmoids. For the last few chapters, we have been considering the existence and flows of plasma in space, and how these came to be recognized and understood. Now we turn from the cosmically large scale to the absolutely minuscule, and to the story of how plasma came to be discovered and explored within the laboratory. Winston Harper Bostick is one of the great heroes of this history. He followed in the footsteps of Langmuir and Spitzer. He was a contemporary of Alfven, and their work intertwined. Bostick's great individual contribution was his discovery of plasmoids. Plasma is all around us, as we have seen, making up over 99% of the universe. A plasma is a distinct entity that has emerged from the great plasma soup, and a plasmoid is a type of plasma, which, as we are about to see, is often spherical or blob-shaped, or sometimes shaped like a donut, and it also has strange properties. It is worthwhile recounting what happened in some detail, because what was discovered and the manner in which it was discovered reveals so much of importance. In the mid-1950s, the 39-year-old Bostick was working as a scientist in the brand new radiation laboratory of the University of California at Livermore. It is today called the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. The lab had been created in 1952 by Robert Oppenheimer's best friend, Ernest Orlando Lawrence, who died in 1958, who had won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1939, and Edward Teller, who is often called the father of the hydrogen bomb. He died in 2003. It was created to supplement the U.S. government's nuclear warfare research at Los Alamos. The Livermore lab continues to be entirely controlled by the U.S. defense establishment and proudly announces on its website today that for more than half a century, it has applied cutting-edge science and technology to enhance national security. Bostick was asked to investigate the firing of plasma into magnetic fields in order to see how the magnetic fields might become deformed and to study the interactions between plasma and magnetism. In particular, he was to look for the manner in which magnetic field lines can be dragged and twisted, as he said in an article of 1938. This had many defense implications, especially relating to the hydrogen bomb, as well as being relevant to the potential control of nuclear fusion for purposes of producing energy, as nuclear fusion can theoretically be confined by magnetic fields. Any solid material, such as steel, used in an attempt to confine superhot plasma would simply melt. Bostick had assumed that he would be firing bursts of plasma at a magnetic field and that they would essentially be blobs of plasma, and that it was the magnetic fields and not the blobs that would be of interest. He was not at all prepared for what actually happened. If he had discovered something of lesser importance, it would probably have been swallowed up in the gigantic secrecy machine that eats most scientific research done for defense purposes in America. However, what Bostick found was of such earth-shaking importance that he had to be cleared to publish accounts of part of what he had discovered, because it was so game-changing in physics that worldwide debate was clearly going to be necessary to try to figure out what it all meant. Funded by the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission, Bostick had invented what is called a plasma gun, which he refers to more conservatively as a button source, because the tip of the gun was like a button. And he began using it to fire plasma into a magnetic field in his lab. And this was when the surprise discovery was made. 11 months later, Bostick's lengthy report, accompanied by many photographs, was published in Physical Review under the title, Experimental Study of Ionized Matter projected across a magnetic field. In this article, he announced, quote, "The plasma is emitted not as an amorphous blob, but in the form of a torus, which is the geometrical term for a donut shape. We shall take the liberty of calling this toroidal structure a plasmoid, a word which means plasma magnetic entity." In a footnote at this point, Bostick was careful to give the credit to the Princeton physicist David Pines for coming up with the term plasmoid. Bostick had originally thought of using the term plasmon, also a term coined earlier by Pines. But Pines pointed out to Bostick that plasmon would really be inappropriate for technical reasons, and so Bostick happily adopted Pines' suggestion of the word plasmoid instead. I contacted David Pines and asked him the details of the naming of plasmoids, and this is what he said in an email to me in December 2015. "You are correct. I did suggest the name to Winston, as plasmon, a term I had earlier coined, was in the process of becoming widely used to describe a quantized plasma oscillation, just as phonon describes a quantized sound wave. And now we have plasmonics and nanoplasmonics as a major subfield of nanoelectronics." In case anyone is wondering what a quantized wave means, it refers to part of a wave forming something resembling a particle. In other words, the ripple, technically called an oscillation, becomes a thing. The best description of this, together with the analysis of the equations applying to it, and the formation of what he called singular regions by a wave, was done by Louis de Broglie in the 1950s. And I have given a lengthy exposition of this in my technical paper, "Is Particle Mass a Function of Degrees of Freedom?" in 2016, a paper that may be downloaded from my entry on researchgate.net. So it was that the word plasmoid was coined, which was to be one of the key words of the physics of plasma to come. This 1956 paper by Bostick is thus of immense historical significance, and I am happy to add further clarity here about David Pines' crucial contribution for the historical record. So, Bostick published the first drawing ever of a plasmoid, which showed three stages. The three-stage drawing shows the plasma emerging from the plasma gun in the form of a ring, and then breaking free and becoming a closed ring, or torus. By this point, the plasmoid was about 5 centimeters in diameter. Numerous photos were also published with the paper, showing other strange and unexpected phenomena. Bostick's discoveries were truly revolutionary. As he says in the paper, "In spite of the fact that there has recently been considerable theoretical interest in the interactions of plasmas and magnetic fields, there had been no theoretical predictions concerning the existence of plasmoids." In other words, no one had ever imagined that such things as plasmoids existed or could exist. The discovery that bursts of plasma were not merely shapeless blobs, but were tori, that's the plural of torus, which means a donut shape, T-O-R-I, tori, was bizarre enough. But things got much, much stranger than that. In his article, and others that followed, Bostick described these features. In this first plasmoid paper, he discussed the interactions of plasmoids with each other. "Rather interesting and unexpected effects are produced when two plasmoids are projected at one another across a magnetic field. For example, the photograph shows an interaction that looks at first sight like an elastic collision of two billiard balls. More striking effects can be obtained when two plasmoids are fired at each other when the pressure in the vacuum chamber is raised. These effects become even more spectacular when 4 sources instead of 2 are employed. When 4 plasmoids were fired at each other, they spun into dramatic spiral shapes, of which Bostick published photographs. They seemed to him to be behaving as living entities, In other words, he wrote, we appear to be dealing with bodies which have strong powers of self-organization and preservation. He also described the plasmoids as being made of a self-organizing putty. Bostick became so excited by this that he also reverted to an earlier concern with galaxy formation and wrote, it is possible to apply the knowledge gained concerning the nature of plasmoids to a hypothesized process of galaxy formation. What Bostick is getting at here is that the behavior of charged plasma and plasmoids may be similar at all scales of size, from these tiny plasmoids in his laboratory to the scale of entire galaxies in space. He then gave cosmological details about that, which we need not go into, except to point out that he was clearly developing the idea that the tiny plasmoids in his lab were, in his opinion, models of what took place in interstellar space, with plasmoids essentially spanning reaches of space that would eventually contain many millions of stars. However, this was mostly bad news for Bostick's bosses. They wanted bombs and power plants, not galaxies. Bostick was perhaps beginning to look too much like an idealist to make the generals comfortable. They had been hoping for something quite different, an easy way to handle plasma in a magnetic environment. They did not want plasma to start misbehaving and running amok in Bostick's lab like that and forming things that were bouncing off each other and appearing to be solid. But of course they had to find out more. So Bostick continued his investigations, and worse was to come. The pace of work and of publication now sped up. By the 1st of January 1957, a further article appeared in Physical Review. This time Bostick was joined by two other authors, E.G. Harris and R.B. Theus, both military scientists brought in from the Naval Research Laboratory in Washington. It seems that Bostick was to work from now on with men who had military requirements and interests foremost in their minds, and would perhaps keep an eye on him. Harris was a specialist in hot plasma physics. Theus was born in 1921 in Tennessee, joined the Army in 1943 as a private, and by 1956 was a nuclear scientist specializing in radiation and particle beams, who would later study the effects of radiation exposure on organisms. The new paper was called Experimental Investigations of the Motion of Plasma Projected from a Button Source Across Magnetic Fields. It reported new studies showing that the speeds of plasmoids could be increased by aligning the magnetic field in a particular way. However, there were even more unusual findings. Quote, the great variety of curious and unexpected phenomena observed seem to indicate that the plasma does not move as an amorphous blob, but must possess some sort of structure that is stable for the length of time involved. We shall refer to this structure as a plasmoid. The purpose of the series of experiments reported here is to gain some insight into the structure of these plasmoids, the way in which they are formed, and the mechanism by which they move across magnetic fields. Unquote. One of the new experiments was to shoot a plasmoid at a 0.65 centimeter wide hole in a copper plate to see if it would go through, which it did. This was done several times and occurred in both the presence and the absence of a magnetic field. But when a magnetic field was applied, after going through the hole, the plasma stretched out at right angles to its course. They then placed a wire screen with a 2 millimeter mesh in front, and the plasmoid went through that even though it was far larger than 2 millimeters. So then they thought, as plasmoids bounce off one another, perhaps we can bounce one off a copper plate with no hole. What happened next was really disturbing. The plasmoid passed through the copper plate as if it were not there, a phenomenon we have already noted in relation to lightning balls and fermions on the quantum scale, and which is also similar to the behavior of angels and other spiritual beings as reported in religious traditions. Furthermore, The plasmoid did not merely go through the metal sheet head-on. It even went through the entire length of the sheet when the sheet was placed flat in its path in a failed attempt to bisect the plasmoid. Now the military people really had something to spook them. They could produce plasmoids that could pass through considerable thicknesses of metal. What could this possibly mean for potential future weapons? For the vulnerabilities of the walls of tanks? For the size of aircraft? For the White House itself, which did not even have copper walls? Little interest is taken these days in Bostick's work, because only a minority of scientists show an active interest in recording the history of discoveries in their fields. The ones who do take the trouble often do a wonderful job, however. If only there were more of them. But as far as Bostick's work is concerned, I have not come across any attempt to chart his efforts since the American Physical Society issued a reprint of some of his key articles in 1963 in the form of a pamphlet. I have managed to collect original copies of everything that was made public by Bostick at that time. I have found over many decades of studying the frontiers of science that one learns the most about a new subject by very carefully scrutinizing the earliest publications, where unguarded remarks are often made and speculative hints are dropped by the enthusiastic discoverers and their colleagues. This is especially true with work done for military authorities, but the censors and secrecy guardians at first tend not to understand the full significance of new discoveries, so they do not always know which aspects of the new things they should be censoring. It takes them a year or two to figure it out. So often the only time one can get some deeper insight into the new discoveries is from the initial reports. Then the steel curtain is drawn down upon the subject and no one dares talk or publish at all without written approval and very strict controls. I have known many fascinating scientific subjects to vanish entirely from public view because of paranoid censorship. Military and security people tend to have no concern at all for the public's understanding of science. They are only interested in weapons and what they call public safety. They make decisions, often holding science back by decades by suppressing knowledge of crucial developments. Although the next article by Bostick to appear in print was his article Plasmoids in the Scientific American for October 1957, the next development in terms of the chronology of discovery was a paper of his which, although not published until 1958, had been delivered to an international conference in August of 1956 in Stockholm. This was a live talk, the text of which was then published, with many photographs, plus the text of the conference discussion that followed the delivery of the paper in the proceedings of that conference. Since it often takes a year or two to get such mammoth volumes containing contributions from scientists all over the world edited and printed, that was why it did not appear until 1958. This is the one paper by Bostick usually mentioned in footnotes by contemporary scientists who have not bothered to look up his other publications. The Stockholm Conference was organized and chaired by that giant figure in plasma science, Hannes Alfvén, whom we already know from Chapter 8. Even though it was really a 1956 paper, I shall call it Bostick's 1958 paper after its year of publication, because that is what everybody calls it. When he delivered it, Bostick was still at the Livermore Lab, but by the time of publication in 1958, he had moved to a new institution. A footnote was added, describing him as now at Stevens Institute of Technology, Hoboken, New Jersey, USA. The Stevens Institute is hardly a household name, but it is an extremely important center of scientific and technological research on the east coast of America, not far from New York City. Bostick became professor of physics and head of the physics department. Perhaps he was glad to get away from people preoccupied with military matters and be free to do some normal science, without being asked all the time what kind of weapon it would be good for. And who knows, perhaps he was glad to escape certain colleagues as well. He did remain a consultant to Livermore, and in 1973 even spent a summer there on a special project, with Ovid Zucker. But his best colleagues appear to have been the ones at Stevens, his closest being Vito Nardi, with whom he worked for decades. Nardi's name will come up again later. In his 1958 paper, Bostick extended his insights into plasmoids by saying something truly remarkable. Quote, "It is entirely possible that ions and electrons ejected from the sun come to Earth in the form of a plasmoid." Unquote. This is an astonishing suggestion, which was later adopted by Hannes Alfven, who also believed that huge plasmoids came in the solar wind all the way to the Earth from the sun. Indeed, in his book Cosmic Plasma, 1981, Alfven even spoke of plasmoids being fired from the sun, as if from a plasma gun, thus carrying the analogy with Bostick's work even further. What is important for our argument here is that giant plasmoids from the sun, given the complex behavior that led Bostick to think of them as living entities, could easily be so intricate and complex in their structure that, in line with the discovery of the Kordalevsky clouds, they could even be intelligent or conscious entities. The implications of that would truly be limitless. Just imagine, for instance, that every plasmoid belched forth by the sun in reaching the Earth or one of the Kordalevsky clouds could, in effect, be a program in the sense of a computer program, and in that sense, a communication of intelligence. In that scenario, the sun could be controlling the Earth's atmospheric phenomena directly when it wishes. Such plasmoids could also, in principle, contain information that receptive people could perceive indirectly as, quote, inspiration, unquote. The sun could talk to, in quotes, the Kordalevsky clouds, the planets, our higher atmosphere, and anyone else who is listening. SETI people should really look for coded information concealed in plasma bursts coming from the sun. But before we can explain that, we need to know some more about the fundamentals of plasmoids and their habit of emitting signals. Bostick reported that he had detected from his laboratory plasmoids, quote, "signals which are believed to be associated with the magnetic fields trapped by the plasmoid," unquote. He says, quote, "the structure of these signals is too complex for analysis," unquote. If that is the case for tiny plasmoids in a lab, how complex might we expect them to be in a gigantic solar plasmoid striking the Earth's magnetosphere and interacting with it? Bostick elaborates further on the solar plasmoids. Quote, "It's quite possible that ionized material ejected from the surface of the sun proceeds and escapes across the magnetic field of the sun in the same manner that laboratory-produced plasmoids cross a magnetic field," unquote. Bostick then goes on to talk about how he is playing with multiple plasmoids in his lab. Quote, "Several of these plasmoids can be made to spiral in consort to produce a ring of plasma. Not only is the torus produced automatically, but also it is stationary," unquote. Experiments showed the plasmoids could turn into standing waves. So like ball plasmas behaving like the quantum phenomena already alluded to, known as solitons. There are many books and papers describing solitons, but to go into them in any detail would take us too far afield. The important point to note here is that we have yet another example for the development of one of the weird phenomena observed in the quantum realm occurring in the human or macro realm. They can also exist within the human body, a subject discussed in numerous publications by Alexander Sergeyevich Davidov, 1912 to 1993, who was director of the Institute for Theoretical Physics of the Ukrainian Academy of Sciences. Two of his key books are Solitons in Molecular Systems, 1985, and Solitons in Bioenergetics, 1986. Bostick's descriptions of his plasmoids became increasingly eerie. Quote, "One of the simplest results, which must be understood, is the barred spiral, which is produced by firing two sources at one time across a magnetic field. The two plasmoids seem to seek each other out unerringly. End of quote. Not only do we now have hunting plasmoids, we even have mating ones. Quote, the leading edges of the plasmoids seem to seek each other out and latch onto one another. After the union of the two plasmoids has been accomplished, the angular momentum will wind them up into a spiral. The resultant plasma and magnetic configuration then seems to be stable. It is rather astonishing that such a bizarre configuration of plasma and magnetic field should appear to be stable. No theoretician known to the author has a priori dreamed of such a configuration, to say nothing of contemplating its stability. Unquote. Bostick published photos and drawings of these weird shapes, which clearly delighted him. He was also able to produce plasmoids with forked tails and pairs of whirl rings composed of helical twists, which moved away from each other in space along magnetic field lines. He says that magnetic fields were trapped in these rings, but he was unable to explore them further. Finally, Bostick enthusiastically reminded people of the possible cosmological implications of what he was discovering. Quote, by firing simultaneously two or more plasmoids across a magnetic field, it has been possible to produce cooperative phenomena, which not only simulate the production of spiral galaxies and astronomical barred spirals, but which permit us to study these processes in the laboratory. Unquote. In the discussion that followed, and which was printed in the proceedings, praise was heaped upon Bostick by various distinguished participants. Patrick Blackett, who was created Lord Blackett in 1969 and won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1948 for his work on cosmic rays, said that Bostick's work had opened an extraordinary, exciting new field. Vincenzo Consolato Antonio Ferraro, a specialist in magnetofluid mechanics, said, this is an interesting and important paper. And indeed it was. Meanwhile, the consternation of the military people might well be imagined. Bostick's plasmoids were behaving like mischievous imps. Everything they did was unpredictable. How could anyone ever control such wild things? They were almost as bad as people. And the essential thing for all those who are obsessed exclusively with defense requirements is always control. Going public. The publication in late 1957 by Bostick of his article entitled Plasmoids in Scientific American, the widely read magazine that acted as a bridge between scientists and the general population, brought these matters to the attention of the wider public for the first time. One might say that this was both the beginning and the end, public awareness of plasmoids, as the subject then vanished, and no meaningful or sustained public discourse about plasmoids ever really occurred afterwards. There was a flurry of brief press articles in newspapers all over America reporting that a scientist named Winston Bostick had discovered strange things called plasmoids. But after Bostick ceased to be news, this stopped, and no one out there seemed to get it. Plasmoids in the public sphere became merely a curiosity of the time, superficially reported, partially discussed in one major article by the man himself, and then, frankly, just forgotten. People's 5-minute attention span, of which we hear so much today, apparently already existed in the late 1950s. It is worthwhile seeing exactly what Bostick did and did not say in his one genuinely public article. Scientific American has always taken pride in having brilliant artists on their staff, who do absolutely superb illustrations of almost any scientific subject. For Bostick's article, the magazine artists took his rather basic illustrations and turned them into spectacular displays. This did much to bring the subject vividly alive. Bostick's Scientific American article commenced with this subtitle. These little pieces of plasma, a gas of electrons and ions, are created in the laboratory with an electrical gun, they have an unexpected capacity for maintaining their identity. And on the very first page, there was a photo taken by Bostick of two glowing balls rushing away from each other and leaving luminous streaks behind, with a caption saying, "Two plasmoids are fired at each other in a vacuum chamber. It can be seen that they repel and veer away from each other, so that each of the strange gaseous shapes retains its separate identity." So the public got the idea, right away, that Bostick was making weird little balls of, quote, gas, unquote, which turned into entities of some kind. But what was this gas? Bostick used his new word in his first paragraph. The gas is called a plasma. In this article, Bostick paid tribute to Irving Langmuir, who had begun serious plasma research. It was Langmuir who had coined the term plasma in 1928. Bostick wrote, quote, "The late Irving Langmuir of the General Electric Company began to study plasmas as long ago as 1921. Unquote. Bostick was fascinated by the work of his predecessor Langmuir and took time to record Langmuir's ingenious experiments by which he was able to measure the temperature of the electrons in a neon light tube. Quote, "Langmuir measured the electron's temperature and found that it amounted to about 20,000 degrees Fahrenheit, about twice as hot as the sun's surface." Unquote. This temperature of 20,000 degrees Fahrenheit is 11,933 degrees centigrade. And yet that same neon light tube can be held in the hand and feels cool to the touch, even when the electrons in the center of the tube are twice as hot as the sun's surface. This information is a crucial fact, which we will need to keep in mind when we consider plasmoid entities. Anyone who thinks plasmoid entities cannot contain within a very small space huge variations in temperature, pressure, charge, and complexity need only remember the lowly neon light tube. That is proof enough that the sort of complexity in plasma that we will be discussing as we go along is not only possible, but probable. Later on, we will encounter such things as double-layer sheaths and spiraling filaments inside plasma cylinders, and we will see how very hot and very cold plasma can exist happily side by side, protected by their surrounding sheaths, which isolate those regions from direct contact with one another absolutely. In closely adjoining regions within cosmic dust clouds, such as the Kordalevsky clouds. Complex architecture within a plasmoid or plasma cloud may be built up in this way with ease, contrary as that may be to our conventional thinking and experience. Bostick returned again to the subject of galaxy formation. Quote, "Photographs of plasmoids in three dimensions show that as a plasmoid moves across the magnetic field, it is twisted into the shape of a left-handed screw. The tempting speculation is that the matter of our galaxies may have been formed under the influence of vast galactic magnetic fields of one predominant orientation, which gave our matter a left-handed bias." Unquote. He then describes another curiosity. In this instance, instead of mating, two plasmoids sometimes run away from each other. So just as with humans, not everybody is attracted to everybody else, and there is such a thing as plasmoid rejection. Quote, "Under certain conditions, our plasmoids form a pair of rings, which do not stay in the center of the chamber, but move away from each other in opposite directions. Our plasma rings are not whirls in a fluid, but are separate, independent bodies." Bodies is in quotes. "As such, they represent a form of ordered organization by nature of which we have not been fully aware until now. Here is a case of electrons and ions collaborating with a magnetic field to form bodies which, though inanimate, assume orderly, characteristic shapes and possess a firm integrity. This should remind us of the plastic microspheres in oil that were described in Chapter 3, which mimicked the behavior of swarming bacteria and appeared to be, quote, alive, unquote, when subjected to electric field pulses. The lessons to be drawn from Bostick's work have still not been fully realized. As early as the mid-1950s, it was perfectly obvious that separate independent bodies with ordered organization and firm integrity had been created in a lab from plasma. And yet, no one dared to imagine what has become clear only in the last few years, namely that these plasmoids can become even more complex than our physical bodies.